My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs Dispatch, our monthly show where we answer your questions, discuss your topics, read your responses.
Yeah. We're reading your responses to Maze Games here. So we're talking about Norco, The Bard's Tale, and Bowser's Fury. I can never figure out if I need to include the Super Mario on that. Are people going to think I'm talking about Shanana?
Oh, the... Well, it, if so, they came to the right place. I can't go too far down that road because I feel like that's a podcast bit. Oh. I don't want to McElroy you. Like, it's a podcast bit you may not be familiar with.
Okay.
And how I constantly get McElroy'd. Like, people bring up podcast bits and I don't know they're the McElroys. And I'm just playing along because I think a fun new thing's happening, but really it's an old McElroy bit. There's a really old, or there's an Andy Daly thing that's real good.
Okay. Okay. So yeah, I couldn't tell if you were censoring yourself because it might have been a podcast a bit.
Oh, no. It's a confirmed Daly banger. Yeah. And not the confirmed Daly bangers that I get in my inbox for signing up with confirmeddailybanger.com. Well, let's get started. We're going to do things a little bit different. This month we usually start with game questions and then move on down to show questions, but then we kind of lose track of time and rush through the end. We're going to go in reverse. So we're starting with show questions this time.
Yeah. And I'll get us started here with Bo, who says, you've mentioned throughout the years intermittently in the show that such a game would win a Waffy for such and such thing. Would you ever consider doing an actual Waffy cast? Something like a one-off tally of a few categories that collect standout elements of games that you've covered for the show. I think it'd be neat.
I've thought about it. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we've discussed it, but I've thought about it in my head. I'll be perfectly transparent here. I've thought about it because it's kind of a layup.
Yes.
And I don't, you know, I get sensitive about being lazy. I don't want to, think that I'm not, you know, doing my job or anything, but it would be a thing with little prep, or comparatively little prep.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it would be fun. It's the kind of thing we could also possibly just like walk into, which we kind of do for dispatches sometimes, depending on the question. Yeah. So I thought about it. I think that's as far as it's gone, is just in our individual thoughts stage.
Remember when I sent you that big list of games that we've covered on the show? Because we're coming up on about 400 of them covered, which seems weird. That would be a thing given that we're about up on episode 400, but the episode math is actually really weird. I kind of made that and did a bunch of data about when games came out because I thought about doing so on the Besties, which is a podcast I listen to. It's a McElroy podcast, actually. Two of the hosts on there had started doing like going back to like 1980 and in 5-year chunks, trying to create like a required reading list. Okay. I thought about doing that for like WAF stuff, which is in the total run of things that we have talked about for the show. You know, like what would be like required reading and why, you know, for, you know, stuff that we've covered, you know, which kind of keeps it from being like, just a one-off thing that we just did for like the game, you know, the must play or the best things of a given year, but that would be like a different kind of approach to it.
Yeah. I took that list. I made a tier list at some point. Yeah. Of things, but it needs to be revisited because there's some stuff I put in S tier. It should probably be an A tier, but I would be down for some variation of that. The trick is that just like you were never running out of games.
Yeah.
It's not even that for me. It's just that like the format is works and it gets us playing new games and you know, we just don't feel like we need it just yet, but it'd be a good live show thing. Don't count it out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely something that we thought about because I like keeping track of stuff. I like keeping that data, you know, so it's all there.
No, Lucas says, are there any games you'd like to cover for WoF, but which can't sustain discussion for long enough? Do you think you'd ever be able to do an episode where you cover multiple smaller games? Sweet Summer Child, we used to.
Mm-hmm.
We used to do what we called split EPs, which were episodes that would cover multiple games. In retrospect, my personal feelings is I wish we hadn't done those and just done shorter episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than doing Portal 1 and 2 in an episode, it'd be fun to do Portal 1 and then revisit Portal 2 like 5 years later with our changed perspectives and such.
Mm-hmm.
I wish we had just done them as individuals.
Yeah.
So yes to shorter games. I think we've done a couple shorter ones recently, mm-hmm. and there'll probably be more of that. And I want more of that. I want that texture. Yeah. And then probably no to split EPs. In the future, just because we tried that and I personally don't like it. In terms of if there are any theoretical games that are too short, I don't think so. Like, that's the thing that gets tricky, because like every once in a while something will be too simple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if something is purely a narrative experience, it can get a little tricky.
Yeah.
Because then we're just recounting it, right? Like there's not as much to do, and we can skirt that line, but we can't go all the way towards it. You know, that is more the thing that becomes tricky. It's not about something being too short.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that we could find interesting things to talk about, even if it's just for like an hour and a half or so, about a really simple short game. Like, I've on my wish list for a long time has been A Short Hike, mm-hmm. which is, I think is a really nice ideal game of like, hey, just hang out and vibe for a little bit on an island.
Yeah,
I think it's a really good dose of that thing mm-hmm. that other people can do for 40 Ever? Hours. Yeah, people can do for a really long time, whereas in that game, they ask you to do it for an hour, and then you're set. You see some mm-hmm. cute stuff, and you get out, and I think that's an interesting form factor.
Yeah.
You know, that's worth talking about.
Yeah. Everything that I can think of, because there's, like, a ton of cool stuff, like, in the micro-horror space, you know, we did that special before. Mm-hmm. I think that would be a cool thing to try and do again, you know, just mm-hmm. because more of that has accumulated, you know, which would be nice. I think that, like, as far as like stuff that is like way too short and way too simple on either axis, but would, you know, be fun to, you know, talk about, that would probably be where it would have to fit in. So something beyond just a like a split EP where it's like two games that by themselves could make an hour and, you know, an hour long episode, and we're insecure about that, so we got to make a 2-hour episode, like actually doing like the micro horror again and throwing a bunch in there and kind of talking about them as a medley, you know.
Yeah, like a super super small experimental.
Yeah.
Kind of things. Like, I think if something's got a commercial release, we can basically do it.
Yeah.
As an episode, mm-hmm. for the most, like 99%,
mm-hmm.
you know, of things.
Yeah.
The one thing I remember about Micro Horror Month, in general, is that it was really unpopular. Like, I never look at the numbers, but uh-huh. You know, I look at them probably once every 2 years or something.
Okay.
And one of the times I looked at it was after that, and just being like, oh, nobody listened to those fucking episodes by comparison.
I don't know about like those episodes, like don't make it a whole month, because like that whole month that was back when we were doing theme months, and that was more on yeah. like the indie, like almost like non-horror kind of stuff. That's what I remember people not liking very much.
I just remember a Kitty Horror Show.
Yeah.
Like, nobody giving a shit. And I was like, and that's okay. That's not, you know, we're not chasing clicks,
mm-hmm.
You know, but it was just a funny thing. It takes a lot for me to set up and take notice of such a thing.
Steven writes, I've listened to many Duckfeed shows since September and started patronizing in January. Thank you. I've noticed that the TV and game specific shows are not ones that I would have too much interest in. As an entitled listener, I believe a show should be made about something that I am a fan of. For TV, it would be Futurama, Duncanville, or Regular Show. For games, it would be Resident Evil 4, Rock Band, or Forza Horizon. Which TV and game show would you be most likely to make? I love the shows you guys currently run, but I was just curious. Keep up the great work. Thank you.
Huh.
Yeah.
We've done an episode on Rock Band.
We have. We've done an episode on Resident Evil 4 coming up on two episodes about Resident Evil 4.
Yeah, we're gonna do another one as well. Forza, I have no particular knowledge of or interest. We're doing a different racing game soon.
Yeah. So it'd have to be a while. Forza Horizon 5 is real neat, Gary.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then in terms of the shows, I don't know what Duncanville is.
Mm-hmm.
Regular show is a little bit before or after my time. Like, yeah. I recognize that it's cool, but I wasn't watching TV. And I'm also like, I've never liked Futurama as much as it feels like I should.
Mm-hmm.
I like the first few seasons of it, but I eventually kind of get irritated at it and stop watching it.
Yeah.
You know, when I try to rewatch.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. And it also would be biting the Talking Simpsons fellow Steve's, because they do a show.
We have to respect their territory.
Yeah. Well, and they're just friends, you know, it's not our turf.
That's why we would respect their territory.
It's not our turf. You don't understand. So probably yes to the second, no to the first.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you know what a Duncanville is?
I have no idea what Duncanville
is. Some kind of Duncan?
I think maybe he runs a town. Some kind.
Yeah, maybe a donut. Runs a donut. I don't.
A
man who runs a donut.
You make some donuts.
How many donuts do you have dominion over right now, Cole?
I did have two apple cider cinnamon donuts in the house over the weekend, but I ate them over the course of the weekend.
Yeah. You recently had dominion over two donuts.
Yes, and I exercised. I extracted from them the last measure of valor.
Yeah. Hell yeah. I more like to steal the valor of donuts.
Mm, yeah. get a bunch of like Danishes.
Yeah, all races of donuts, and the people don't understand this, but the sprinkles and decoration on a donut, that's basically like epaulettes on a general.
Yeah,
so I like to put those on my chest. I do a little swirl, and then put some buttercream on my nipple, and then go out into the world and get saluted.
It's part of your morning routine, your rituals.
Yeah, take that, vets. Donuts.
Duncanville is a show created by Amy Poehler. It's a cartoon about a 15-year-old boy with a rich fantasy life.
Oh, that sounds fine.
Mm-hmm.
Quinn says, "Hey, Gary and Cole, being from a different generation than you two has made your insights in the gaming community very informative. I love hearing about your experiences with consoles and tabletop games that I've only heard about. I also know you two have a bit of an age gap. How often do either of you bring up something that the other isn't familiar with because of that age difference? Do you have any stories or memories of this particular instance?"
Not really. I think if I bring something up that's especially like age related or whatever, it's not it's something that Gary knows of by reputation because he stayed plugged into those spaces, if not interested enough to watch or consume those things. And I've got that Nick and Knight mindset where I've always been of the 60s and 70s, so like stuff that would even be before Gary's time, I've got kind of a little bit more knowledge of, I think.
And some of that stuff it's not like I haven't heard of The Odd Couple.
Yeah.
I'm just not going to watch it with your eyes. You know, like I've heard of these things.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm just not,
I
don't know anything about them.
I guess I only say that to say that my knowledge extends forward. So when Gary talks about something, you know, that is from the, 7 years, I'm aware of it. Yeah. Also because like culture from the 80s has been recycled endlessly for us. So it's kind of impossible not to know about some of it.
It comes up every once in a while in Abject Suffering.
Yeah.
Like something will be based on a TV show usually from like the aughts. That's a period I don't have a lot of experience with,
mm-hmm.
where I was a little bit more unplugged from culture.
Yeah. And you'll drop some movie on me, like the Just Dead Fred or whatever.
Yeah. Just Dead Fred.
What are you talking about? Yes.
Yeah. So it happens from time to time, but nothing notable. It's not a friction point.
No, not at all. Yeah. Dylan writes, "I'm going on a long trip over the summer/fall, and I'm looking to download a bunch of WoW episodes to listen to while I don't have access to my computer for games. What would you recommend for solid service episodes, but don't really require playing the game, or you shouldn't play it, but are interesting discussions just the same? I'm thinking of the Pathologic and the Sexy Brutale episodes." And there's a follow-up here, but I think that the follow-up is related. As a follow-up, what makes a game interesting to discuss to discuss in this as a service way? There are always games we can gush about, but I'm not thinking of praise so much as mechanics, failures, or paradigms. What have you found makes a game particularly meaty to dive into, regardless of the quality? What gets you going?
What gets you going? it's interesting that those two are brought up as service things, because I think pathologic mm-hmm. is a consummate game as service mm-hmm. thing, where to me, game as service is the definition of something where it is definitively worth experiencing, mm-hmm. but is a huge pain in the ass to actually play.
Yes.
And provides a lot of friction, you know, that a lot of people probably won't want to go through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the interesting thing is that Sexy Brutale does the second part of that.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of friction you probably don't want to go to, but I don't think it's necessarily something you have to experience. Like, uh-huh. that's more of a gate, goofing on something. And the fun of that episode is us being mean.
Yeah.
Whereas something like Pathologic, or really specific like that, Deadly Premonition, mm-hmm. things that, that it's arguable about whether you should play them.
Yeah.
You know, but they're just very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That's to what I think of as a game as service episode.
Yeah. I also think games that, even if a narrative is present, more of the joy is in discussing the generalities, mechanics mm-hmm. kind of stuff. So like, I don't know, it probably wouldn't hurt you to download and listen to the Hitman episodes, because there's so much more than even we can just talk about in that. And just like talking about problem solving in those spaces is, would be fun to listen to.
But by definition, your experience will be different as well. So yes. Like, you get to hear them, but then it's not taking anything away. Mm-hmm. It's game and service.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel kind of similar about The Sims that we've done, Frostpunk, Roller Coaster Tycoon, being kind of entirely discussions of mechanics, kind of things. Yeah. Like, it would almost act as a primer if you decided to go and play those later on. Like any of the roguelike episodes as well.
Any old, super old PC games?
Oh yeah, yeah. Bard's Tale probably has a service.
Lords of Magic.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind Nox. Of thing where it's like, yeah, like it's either gonna be a little bit esoteric to get into, or like maybe it's difficult to get a hold of and play.
Yeah.
And your certain setup that you have now. Things like that. Like you're entirely a console gamer, and that kind of thing is just absolutely a foreign country.
Yeah, or PCS console games. I'm thinking specifically of Uncharted Waters to New Horizon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Tricky esoteric things like that are good games as service, I think. Mm-hmm. And then, like, in terms of what makes the best games, it's pretty tricky, the balance, of things. It's a lot of people have said, like, our Resident Evil stuff is really good, and I agree. And I think the reason, the special combo of that, because I was thinking about that, because we have another Resident Evil coming up, mm-hmm. Is that it is a really good balance of mechanics, like, interesting narrative that mm-hmm. is straddles the line between some cool-ass shit to fawn over and stuff to make fun of.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's grandfathered into both of us.
Yeah.
So like, we both just like it regardless of whether it's fucking stupid.
Right.
Someday we'll do a Resident Evil Zero episode. I don't like that game,
mm-hmm.
but it's still, we take the leech guy seriously enough to make it kind of fun to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Excuse me,
Marcus. Come on.
Yeah.
Put some respect on his name. He invented the T virus.
He wears a robe all the time and he didn't just get out of a bath. I got no respect for him.
He's been through a lot, Gary.
I know, but put on some fucking joggers if you're going to leave the house, man. Jesus, Marcus, sloppy bee. I think those make a really good combination. And I think that also, to me, is part of the reason why they're some of my favorite games. Like, I think they mm-hmm. get the balance right.
Yeah.
Games that have silly stories, a lot of times they go too far in that direction, don't have interesting mechanical things to talk about. The Resident Evil games are at least like interesting there, mm-hmm. even when they're not at their best.
Yeah. And if you're downloading stuff for a trip, something that I think squares a lot of these circles is The Last Express. Download and listen to that episode.
Yeah, that's a really good games of service episode. I'll do a last show question here.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys, Jonathan says, do you guys have any games for WoF that you hesitate to cover? And this is, I think it's supposed to be because only one, but there's an amazing typo. I have to call out because this typo became Brie Vosinally, And it's supposed to be because only one major.
Yeah. Brevousive only.
Yeah. And it's just an incredible typo. I type like a left-handed four-year-old. Like I don't type well, so I'm not making fun of the typo. I just
like how you just described a normal four-year-old.
a left-handed type, four-year-old typing with the right hand.
That's by demons, you see.
Yeah. He's got kicked in the head as a mule. But brevocinally, hesitate to cover because only one major aspect of it is interesting or worth discussing. That's a bit abstract. As an example, I might mean Final Fantasy 15. Mm-hmm. All the stuff about the game's development is interesting in Comedy Gold. At one point, Nomura wanted it to be a musical because he saw the Hugh Jackman Les Mis movie. I shit you not.
Jesus Christ.
So a lot of hay could be made, but the game sucks to play, and the story gets in the way of good character moments. Sorry for the oddball question. Thank you for the hours of content. That's a tough one. It's hard for me to think of other things where I'm like, we would do this, but there's only one thing I want to talk about.
Right. I don't know that I have an answer for this.
Yeah. That does sound, I mean, I'm not in any interest to play Final Fantasy 15. Mm-hmm. And like the development, it does. My Nomura is in the Kojima hole for me, where it's like, it's not fun for me to make fun of him. Like that sucks. You know, that makes me go Jesus, but it makes me go Jesus. Like I don't know. Like I just walked out of some wreckage. Like it makes me say Jesus, like, you know, Captain America at the end of Infinity War. Like not like you know, fun Jesus. I'm just like, man, that man should probably be put on an island. what, oh, that sucks. He should be in jail. It's not fun for me. I'm just like, fuck that guy. Yeah, what an asshole. What if his kids left him?
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know. This kind of falls back into games that I feel are super fun to play, but there's not much to say about them. Like, I don't know, keeping it in this vein, Final Fantasy 15 has really good music. And I know that because of Theatrhythm, like Theatrhythm Final Bar Line is fucking amazing. It's a really good game. Mm. How much is that? I like there's a little bit of things to say about mechanically because of the like party system and the way that it kind of like abstracts into this fun little battle. But mostly you're just there to kind of go through a museum of Final Fantasy music, which Revelation Final Fantasy has very good music.
Yeah. It's a music. It's like, there's lots of games with like great music, and that would be not enough to talk about.
No,
have whole episodes where we don't mention the music.
Uh-huh.
Of a game, that's a fuck up, you know. But it happens sometimes.
Yeah.
So that would probably be a good example. But even then, like, it's a hard question to answer.
Yes. Yeah. Going to media questions. Michelle says, I work at a sex shop that has a surprisingly decent corporate playlist. Most of the songs are horny or horny adjacent, but sometimes some weird choices slip through the cracks. Recently we've started playing Man on the Moon and South Central Rain, which got me and my coworkers thinking, which REM singles have been most and least intentionally fucked to? Sorry if you've already covered this one under File Underwater.
No,
which was our show, our show about the band REM. So this is not like the most fuckable or least fuckable REM singles. I'll give you a list, Gary. But the ones that have been most and least intentionally fucked to.
I have intentionally fucked to a lot of REM as a high schooler.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the person I was having sex with may have unintentionally been listening to REM. Not intentionally fucking, that gets, you know, but you know what I mean? Like it just popped up because that's the music I was listening to.
Okay. So it's not that the fucking is intentional or unintentional. I think that just it's like, okay.
Listening.
Yeah. The fact that it was played during fucking.
Well, and that's the question that's being asked. Like the question isn't about unintentional fucking.
Okay. Your joke gave me a brief moment of horror that it sounded like I was joking about the idea of unintentional fucking.
No. And yeah, that's not, I was just, the idea that I was purposely listening to REM and the person, the joke was supposed to be about my dorky music taste.
Yes. Yeah.
in terms of unintentional, I'm going to give any of the singles from Around the Sun, like, you know, just buckling down, getting ready to have sex, to Electron Blue. And then all of a sudden the Q-tip verse comes on, you know, or even worse.
I think you mean the Outsiders. That's the Outsiders.
The Outsiders. Yeah. Yeah, The Outsiders comes out. I guess that wasn't a single, kind of surprisingly. But you're getting down, you know, or maybe the Q-Tip verse is on and you're getting down and it sounds like a, you know, a cool R&B song. And then Michael Stipe starts warbling on out there, you know.
It's the thing. I think REM is just it's a pretty unsexy band, you know.
It's weird, though, because we talked about this in the show, how like in the 80s, kids would go wild dancing and stuff. Like they were much cooler. And with that comes like a certain kind of like, you know, some people in the 40 Watt Club probably went and like, you know, to an REM concert. So like probably intentional, a lot of the early stuff back when they were cool college kids.
Yeah. Yeah. I think around the time they went to WB, went to Warner Brothers, things started maybe falling off. So like somebody is absolutely fucked to fall on me.
Yeah.
You know, it is very funny to think about fucking to South Central Rain.
Yeah, all of these songs are funny to fuck to. I don't know what, and none of these are, you know, there's not a sexy song among them. It's great.
There's some
sexy. No wonder I love this band so much. Wait, but look at the list. There's like two sexy songs.
I mean, Crush with Eyeliner is pretty good.
Yeah, that's sexy.
It's pretty sexy. Yeah,
there's that. Tongue. They're all just on that one album. You know, but nothing on, you know, Out of Time is sexy.
Turn
nothing
You Inside Out. Come sexy. On, please.
Yeah. Turn You Inside Out, parentheses, lose my wedding ring in her, end parentheses. Like,
Gosh.
Yeah. So probably earlier stuff more so.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you
man sized wreath sounds horny, but it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. So you put on the early stuff and then Spotify takes you, you know, takes you onto a reveal and suddenly, you got the chorus in the ring, baby.
Yeah. It's not right. It's finding appropriate music for sex too is really hard because if you choose something that sounds obvious, like, you know, the sexy slither of a female snake, then it's a joke. Like you put on a bunch, you know, it sounds really silly to put on a bunch of, you know, Barry White or something.
Yeah.
The compromise I have found is Rat-a-tat.
Oh yeah, Rat-a-tat would be a good one. Yeah.
You put on Rat-a-tat. It always works. It's not dorky. You don't have to sit there and be like, did he fucking say, what was that lyric? That's stupid. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to have that going through your head. It's plausibly cool.
Rat-a-tat. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Godspeed you, Black Emperor.
Sure. If you want it, it's tantra. Like,
yeah. We're trapped in the belly of this machine, and this machine's bleeding to death.
Like, you'll never escape. That sounds like that sounds awful.
I'm obviously joking. I like that band. It would be
Tubular Bells.
It is a joke too.
Yeah. Mayniav asks, I've been playing a little of Weird West again as they popped out of a PS5 port as a free upgrade the other day. And it's reminded me of two things. One, that I'd probably be really into Westerns if I put the time into watching them. And two, the mashup of Lovecraft and witchery in an eerie desert really works for me in a way I'm surprised hasn't looked into sooner. For either of you, are there any genres or subgenres that you think you'd really like and just haven't taken a dive into? This could be in gaming or any media like music or film.
I feel like I've just taken the dive into stuff that I think I would like.
I there's lots of things I haven't taken the dive into.
Okay.
I think they're just like big worlds, you know, like I've oftentimes thought like I could probably get into 4X strategy games.
Oh yeah. Okay.
And it's just very intimidating. I just haven't taken the plunge on that.
Yeah.
You know?
So I guess the difference between a dive and a dip, because like, you know, there's also like, I know that if I fucked around with too much Paradox, it's bye-bye Cole.
Yeah.
Later. See you. Yeah. I'm on the fucking boat from the end of Return of the King. Later, everybody. Yeah. It's been so much fun.
You just fade out like the pictures in Back to the Future. Like, I dipped into most things.
Yes.
You know, but the dive is different, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know?
So I mean, like outside of games, like, you know, genre works and stuff, like, I don't know. I feel like I got a pretty, over my life, I have dipped into plenty of different kinds of things, and anything that I have like a real interest in, I've probably had a phase about it, you know?
For me, there are plenty of things I can think of. for this. A cause of big anxiety. Something that'll happen every once in a while is I will think about I like a certain kind of music. And most of it comes from the United States and Canada, but there are a whole lot of countries out there and they probably have little indie bands. And then when I was learning Portuguese through the app, I looked up Portuguese bands and there's a band that's like the Portuguese Smiths and I listened to them and they're really good. No, that'd be a great name. But they're known as, it's a nickname for them. And they're really good. Mm-hmm. And I was like, fuck, like I can't like this is here's just like seven more albums. And that's like, I haven't finished the Smiths albums. I have, or the Also Rans. I barely started on my Echo and the Bunny Men. Like the past is infinite. And mining the past means that I am in a constant state of feeling like this.
Echo and the Bunny Men only have like one or two albums. They upgraded the drum machine eventually.
Yeah, it's true. But I haven't finished them. Okay. You know, I've only listened to that first album that has the Killing Moon on it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No. Everybody loves that song about horrible crimes.
It's a great crime song. There's a chill song called Pink Frost that's the same thing, that's about like killing a woman and having her blood turn the snow pink. And like it's their most popular single, and they're a real good time fun band who I've seen a couple times, this decade. And then they always whip that out, dude. Everyone freaks out. Yeah. It's like shit, Jesus. Man. A dark song, dude. It was the way at the time.
Oh, yeah. Let's see here. Quinn writes, "Hey, guys, absolutely love the show. I know that you are both very musically inclined. Music is one of the most important parts of my life, so it's hard for me to choose a favorite band or artist, so I won't make you pick favorites either. What are some of your top musical artists or bands? Thanks for all the video game humor and insight." I'm happy you put them in that order.
Yeah. I appreciate that. What you go, Cole?
Yeah,
name some bands you love.
I mentioned Godspeed earlier. I like them. Big ones for me since college, and just because my music listening really froze around then. But Ockerville River and Shearwater, two related acts that kind of diverged into very different directions around 2008. But I love both of the bands dearly. Talk about them all the time. And then good old fashioned the Mountain Goats. Let's throw that in as well. Pretty much always down to listen to any of those.
Yeah. I like a lot of bands. I love Guided by Voices and David Bowie, the extended Spencer Krugerverse. So, Wolf Parade, Swan Lake, Sunset Rubdown. There's a new band. I got into a new band, which never happens. There's a band that came out this year, late last year, called The Tubbs, that I think are incredible. Hasn't happened in a minute. And then lately I've been feeling very nostalgic and I've been listening to a lot of old They Might Be Giants.
Oh yeah.
Because it was a high school favorite and I've been listening to weird old songs I haven't thought about since I was like 20. Because for those nostalgia hits.
You know what? You mentioned up something I've been listening to a lot because of high school nostalgia. The Eels. Mm-hmm. Listening to lots and lots of Eels. Yeah.
It sometimes feels good to do that. I found some old, I was digging through my computer and found some old mixes that ex-girlfriends had made me.
Ooh.
And some of the song, like the whole mixes on the whole, there were some highs and lows, but I've been finding like the songs that were the standouts that I really loved at the time. And just having that very good, like, oh shit, this song fucking rocks. And I haven't listened to it in seven years. Mm-hmm. It's a good shit.
Yeah.
Feel good. Good music. Shit, feel good.
Music. I think it'll stick around for a while.
Yeah. Love music. I get depressed if I don't listen to music for a while. Like when we go and do a convention or something.
Oh yeah.
It doesn't fit into my lifestyle. Like when I'm traveling as well. And then I get home and I just like put on YouTube music while I do stuff and it feels great.
Yeah.
Chris says, do you think with how popular The Last of Us TV series is that it will lead to other networks, streaming services, making their own video game adaptations? Any you'd like to see or think would work as a TV series, and any thoughts on the show itself? If you've seen it, cheers. I've seen Cheers. It's fine.
It's a lot of it. A lot of episodes of Cheers.
Yeah. Hey man, have you watched Cheers? Buckle up. I have not watched The Last of Us yet. I know you have as a scouting measure.
Yeah,
We'll do it at some point. I am interested in it.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Should have been 12 episodes and not 9. They really kind of ended up getting rushed.
It's usually the opposite.
I know, right? Yeah. It could have used a little bit more leg room to actually tell like the interesting slower stories that were in the setting, as opposed to just kind of speed running. Like all of the cannibal stuff is one episode.
Yeah.
Like that whole sequence, one episode. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. That's frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I feel like we've talked about like very recently as well, like a series that we wish would get adapted. And a lot, you know, the truth is like a lot of them are is the thing. So, I mean, do I hold out hope that Amazon's Disco Elysium is going to capture the spirit of the original? I don't know.
Well, zero, it's going to capture the spirit.
Yes.
It might end up accidentally being a separate good thing.
Yeah.
You know, which is about what you hope for.
Yeah.
I keep thinking about that with the Fallout. Show. It's like I have some vague hope for that. Maybe it'll turn out to be a separate good thing.
Yeah.
And I don't hate a separate good thing.
Did you know that there was a whole ass Halo television series and none of us heard about it?
I heard about it.
I didn't hear about it. I was like, wait a minute, there's a Halo TV show?
Yeah. I every once in a while we'll check in, you know, I'll go to the AV Club and I'll click over to Otaku or Kotaku. I don't like that website, but I will click and they talked about it at some point. So I found out that there was a Halo series and nobody liked it.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you gonna watch the Twisted Metal?
I mean, if we do it for the show, I will. Yeah. But I'm not gonna do it if I'm not getting paid. I'm not gonna watch that shit for free. It's based on Twisted Metal, man. I'm good.
Oh my god.
You're asking me to give you what I'm looking to sell you.
Man, oh man.
Some life questions.
Life questions.
Is this me or you?
I believe it doesn't matter. You go ahead.
Okay. Matt says, what are your grocery staples? The thing you buy either every trip or keep stocking in your house at all times. Our big ones are onions, peppers, and garlic. They go in pretty much anything.
Yeah, that feels onions, pepper, garlic, can never get enough spinach. You know, I'm big on various fluids. So like almond milk, creamer or not creamer, but half and half.
Kramer is how it's pronounced.
Kramer. Giddy up. Yeah.
Various creamers.
Whatever meat happens to be on sale, I can be pretty flexible when it comes to
Kramer.
You know. Kramer.
him and the turkey.
Yeah exactly. Yeah. Hey, good buddy.
You'd be a racist.
Yeah. my grocery stuff ends up being real simple, but yeah, I also just blow through peppers and onions. Yeah. So
me and Liv do kind of meal planning for the week on weekends. Mm-hmm. So we buy produce and meat depending on what we're going to make. So typically there are like onions and stuff involved, but the general staple stuff is for breakfast and lunches.
Yeah.
I keep bananas and yogurt and string cheese around. So I have relatively healthy snacks and breakfast supplements. Those are my regular things.
Yeah.
That we fill up on every week.
This is going to sound really pathetic. If I want snack stuff, I can always count on my mom to give me that.
Mm.
But whenever I leave their house, I call it reverse shopping. Like yeah, she I will say, but it's not anything that I do, but like when I'm going, they'll say, oh, take this bag of chips. We don't want it. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm not buying
that
them.
That used to happen to me, I guess is a better way to put it. But yeah. My mom used to do that as well.
Yeah. I think it's just a general mom behavior. But that's how I get a lot of leftovers, but also get, you know, snack stuff that I do not want to buy for myself because I don't really want it in the house.
Yeah. Cause you'll eat it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We try to keep, a snack around, but like a snack.
Yeah.
The trick we found is if we have multi snacks, we'll like gorge, you know, but if we just have a snack around, it's easier to regulate.
Get yourself like a box of Cheez-Its, right?
Yes. Yeah. And that'll be our Cheez-Its for the week. Mm-hmm. And between the two of us, we share a box of Cheez-Its over the course of an entire week.
Yeah.
It's not so bad.
Mm-hmm. Jonathan writes, I attended Midwest Gaming Classic 3 years in a row leading up to COVID, but haven't been back since. Pandemic aside, the draw to attend started to wane as I felt like I was seeing the same things over and over, and the charm of the convention was wearing off. IMHO, the old hotel site, was much more fun and felt less sprawling. Having just attended Midwest Gaming Classic, do you have any ideas for shows of that sort to keep repeat attendees interested and coming back?
Interesting.
I would say that they should reach out to content creators, not gigantic ones, because it makes a whole big thing. You don't want all those people, but I would say mid-range folks like podcasters, and fly them out and put them up and have them do live shows. That would be my big thing.
Maybe a VIP room
with
snacks.
Yes.
And bottled water and chairs.
Yeah, you really
don't
can't
make them
go
beg
wrong.
For chairs. Don't make them like go in little hitman missions to try to get chairs. Consistently and every single time they've gone to any convention for some reason.
Sometimes even for the table.
Yeah. Just having to scout like on-site procurement.
stuff is to smuggle it into my stomach. Just throw it up in parts.
I've got a concealable table. In terms of guests coming back. So when I think of the things that would make me come back, it's kind of, you know, I'm the wrong person to ask because I will always just go to a thing.
Yeah.
Like this, if it's in my town. So like when we're not doing PRGE, I'll just go because I want to get some functional exercise, like walking around having a, you know, it's worth it as an experience for me, even if I'm not going to get anything because I'm constantly being, all I want in life is to walk around up and down aisles and constantly be exposed to new stimulus.
Yeah.
And things to react to. And if I'm doing that for a Saturday, that's like a perfect Saturday and be that like an antique mall or a convention or anything like that.
Yeah.
So my point being like the thing that keeps me coming back is just a variety of thing.
Yeah.
You know, like a big artist alley, a big craft section, you know, lots of different vendors.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm a really fucking easy mark for this shit.
The trick is, you know, if it's in your town, I have no idea how far Jonathan has had to travel for Midwest Gaming Classic. If we saw you, hello. It was nice seeing you. But you know, so that could possibly change the calculus. I'm always going to be more interested in the artist alley craft stuff than I am in the games. You know, like there's only so many big Sterilite bins full of, you know, kind of mid-tier games from the 360 era that you're going to want to look at, you know. You know, I think that tends to get pretty samey. So, you know, kind of fixing
variety.
Like lean toward more variety of stuff. But that's a matter of like, okay, well, people apply for those. They don't actually, you know, have a lot of control over that mixture. Yeah.
Here's the thing, too. In honesty and self-awareness, we're the outliers in that.
Yes. Yeah.
The bins are being crawled over constantly and artist alleys languish in these things. Like we're not, you know, not only am I an easy mark, I'll go anyway, but you don't have to do what I want. I'll just go, you know, because and most people who go just watching Gen Pop, all they want to do is dig through bins.
Yeah.
You know, it's a treasure hunt. For them, and I get that. I got no contempt for that, but that it seems like they're doing it to me.
You know, and also like I've not specifically asked this question of folks who run these things, but like I don't know if they're aiming to get the same people back every year. You know, I think you know, it might just be like, you know, their goal might be to bring in a whole bunch of new people every time, you know, instead of leaning on, you know, repeat customers coming back. Would it be nice if everybody came back? Yeah, I'm sure. I don't know if that's what they're trying to optimize for either. Speaking of kind of not being in the target audience or, you know.
Yeah. Being kind of outlier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got no idea.
Honestly. No clue.
I'm going to do a couple game questions just so we hit all the question types.
Yeah.
And then we can move on to topic, I think. Carrie says, I want to start by saying I really love all your shows. I can listen to you talk about anything. Thank you. I came to WAF via Bonfireside Chat as I'm kind of Souls obsessed. So my question is in that direction. Do you enjoy Soulsborne challenge runs either as a viewer or a participant? If so, what are some of your favorites? I'm a fan of randomizers as well as weird weapon restrictions, especially by Yamfa, Y-M-F-A-H, and the backlogs. And I'm about to start a Bloodborne guns only run that I assume will go very poorly, as that's probably the game that I'm least skilled at in the franchise. I watch these. I've watched everything Yamfa has done. Highest recommendation possible. They're really fun.
Yeah.
Really fun editing. He doesn't talk over them.
Okay.
It's almost all done through subtitles, which I appreciate. Like, they're really kinetically and energetically edited, but without a YouTuber voice.
Yeah.
Improv-ing.
Yeah.
And the emphasis is on edited. Yeah. They're productions. They're not, whoa, this is crazy. This is crazy. You know, it's not somebody just trying to make up stuff as they go. So there's a script, there's a concept. They're really good.
Yeah.
Very high recommendation. Very entertaining. Yeah. And, so I'm a big fan of those. I haven't done, this kind of thing in a long time. I used to do a little bit for Dark Souls back when I had a lot more time, and the result, we were doing less podcast. And now I do not.
Yeah. And I enjoy hearing about these in principle, and I will like say, go to, like Lobos, go to his channels and like poke around, you know, on recent stuff, just to see. Most of my enjoyment comes from hearing that something is possible or hearing something that was even, you know, something was even attempted. I just don't watch a lot of video game content in general, streams or, you know, videos or otherwise. So that's a, you know, that's a me problem, not a them problem.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chapel writes, how do you two think the gaming landscape since 2011 will affect Elder Scrolls 6? Since Skyrim has come out, Dark Souls has taken the world by storm. Ubisoft has squeezed the open world formula dry, and survival crafting games have occupied a huge portion of the indie market. It's been 12 years since Skyrim and 8 since Fallout 4, and open world games have changed a lot. Bethesda has always had a very specific approach to the open world genre. When Skyrim came out, they were really the only name in town. Do you guys have any theories for how/if they will modernize their formula for Elder Scrolls 6?
That's a good question. Like, a lot of games have come and taken the lunch, you know, of the Elder Scrolls thing. But my if I'm just speaking to my preferences, like, I'm bad at predicting industry shit. I don't really do it. You know, the industry is not predictable to me other than the fact that, like, there will always have big Ubisoft open world things. I think that the Bethesda formula for that is different enough from the Ubisoft formula that for my own druthers, if Elder Scrolls 6 was like another Skyrim, but prettier and with some minor and esoteric upgrades, I would be happy.
Yeah.
It's been 8 years since Fallout 4. That's a long time. And that specific flavor of open world feels different enough to me than the Ubisoft flavor to where I'm thirsty for one again.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be Elden Ring. It wouldn't have to be Zelda. Like, a new, that type of open world is its own esoteric, weird, dorky, stiff thing that I think is kind of fun.
Yeah.
So for me, I would say no, don't modernize it.
Yeah.
But that's me being selfish. It's not necessarily predicting anything.
I have a lot of missing data in this in terms of predictions, because I have not played Fallout 76, which has kind of grown and evolved and has been what Bethesda's focus has been on for a very long time. Nor have I played Elder Scrolls Online. I've got no idea. That's just a black box. It's a black hole. And that has probably been a place where they've been trying out some ideas and things like that. I can say what I would like to see, you know, like, bring Fallout 4/76 crafting and base shit, into, you know, Elder Scrolls 6 in some fashion. Like, let me build and man a fort, please.
That'd be cool.
Please and thank you.
Yeah.
Send people out on like guard duty and excursions to bring me treasure.
Yeah, you know, that'd be really
stuff,
cool
stuff. But you know, that's what I can see. I think that when we see, what's the big one that they're doing, Starfield this year?
Yeah, Starrim.
Yeah, Rimfield. Whatever they do there, I think will give us a little bit of an idea of maybe the direction they're headed mechanically for, like, how a Bethesda open world exists. I don't think maybe they're going to be counting on feedback on that as well to help steer Elder Scrolls 6, which, you know, all we know exists from that is a, you know, teaser trailer that showed some mountains or whatever.
Yeah. Well, so we know there'll be mountains.
Okay. We got to cross that off the list.
That's the important thing. If there are, if you like mountains, you will like this game. And yeah, I at this point I'm pretty easygoing about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I don't know. I'd fuck around in a Skyrim again, like a big dumb Skyrim, even though I don't have any interest in Starrim, really, cause I don't care about space, but I will go back and swing some swords at some skeletons in the future.
Go into a necromancer's crypt.
Yeah. Realm. Yeah. Like go into a demon's realm, go into a necromancer's crypt. There was a YouTube commercial that was showed me where it was talking about, a mosquito repellent device, and it has the beautiful sentence, easily create zones where you can easily create zones where there are no mosquitoes. And I was like, God, I love to fucking easily create zones. And I just want to easily go into some necromancer zones, skeleton zones.
I've got smart lights in my house, and that lets you set up zones.
Yeah. You can easily effortlessly create a zone.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
You know, it could be like, oh, east side of house, west side of house, you know, because lighting changes depending on those. Or could you know, or it could be the shit that I have.
Yeah, yeah. Why not?
which is Dark Realm and the Radiant Domain.
Beautiful. Moving on to our topic.
Lightning round.
I forgot about the lightning round. Let's do lightning round, baby. Moving on, Doug says, do you have a favorite in-game bespoke language, written or verbal? Gibberish counts too. If it's in-game bespoke language, it's hard for me to think of too many of those. Simlish is good.
Yeah, Simlish, I think, is your example here.
Yeah, Simlish is fun. Like, if a character speaks Elvish or something, I don't give a shit. Like, that's not cool. Like, I don't know.
Dunny. I like Dunny because you gotta, just from like a written perspective, like, and obviously in Riven you figure out their numbers, but also like in 4 in Revelation you've got to work to decode their you know, some of their written glyphs and stuff, so that's a pretty language. Like, visually I couldn't hear less about speaking it, but
yeah, you're not going to learn to speak it.
Yeah.
I said it before, but something about learning a language in a game activates really hard my I could be learning a real skill thing. And that's a fallacy, because, you know, typically, like, languages and games are just ciphers.
Yeah.
They're not really languages. They don't have, you know, grammar and such, syntax. But at the same time, for some reason, it activates that. Yeah. You know, I never get that from like Rock Band. I don't get that from anything, but from learning a language, I'm like, I could fucking learn an actual language. It's stupid that I'm only fluent in English if I'm going to sit down and learn fucking Chozo. This is dumb. Like,
one of my favorite approaches to this was, on old, EverQuest, old EverQuest servers, like the hardcore ones, it hung out on role-playing servers more often. Different races had different languages, that they spoke. And if you were not trained up on that language skill, if anybody around it was speaking it, it would just come out as garbage text.
That
occasionally would like have, you know, it was just, you know, hashed regular words or whatever there was something, but like as you skilled up, you would see like a couple of words in there, you know, some of the characters would be decoded, which is a real neat way to play that. So like, you know, when they introduced the Ixar, the lizard people from a brand new continent, there was no common language, so everybody had to basically learn that skill, learn how to speak to them.
Returnal did neat stuff with that. Like getting those language glyphs and just having occasional words.
Yeah.
Kind of stand out.
Brandon asks, have you guys looked into the Fear and Hunger games? I try to stay up to date, but I am woefully behind on podcast listening. I feel like they have so much Berserk DNA in an interesting gameplay loop that they could be up your alley.
We got a couple questions about this in the Slack as well recently, because Super Eye Patch Wolf put out a video. About it, which I watched. And it's a good video. This was a patron request that we agreed to do and then bounced off of. One thing about that Super Eye Patch Wolf, and I'm not calling them out or anything, I subscribe to them, fan. This game is grosser than they were letting on.
Yeah. One of the first enemies that you run into will sexually assault you. And one of the status effects that you get is the physical effect from having that forcibly done to you. Yeah. Also, your legs will be chopped off.
It's weird that Super Eye Patch Wolf elided basically all of that stuff.
Yeah.
I was really surprised because mm-hmm. the way, if you watch that video, it really seems like the main thing is just that it's bleak and hateful.
Right.
And it is bleak and hateful, but it's just stuff that squicks us out.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that we're not scared of getting canceled over it. Like we didn't make the game, mm-hmm. You know, and we don't endorse half the shit that we talk about. Right. So right. like, I'm not worried about that. It just is uncomfortable, mm-hmm. You know, and our comfort matters. Like it's, you know, call us cowards if you like, but it grossed me out to mm-hmm. just constantly have to talk about like, oh yeah. And this enemy, does this, you know, assault you and this troll is hanging dong and you cut it off and shit like that. Like there is a lot of Berserk DNA, and watching that video, I think is actually an ideal way to get Fear and Hunger.
Yeah.
Speaking of earlier question as games a service, video is a service, mm-hmm. right? Like watch that video and get everything you need from Fear and Hunger IMO.
Yeah. And like where we draw the line is fuzzy and also arbitrary, because like there's squicky shit in Lisa, the Painful RPG. I love that game and would like to do it on the show sometime. You know, mm-hmm. it just got into Fear and Hunger and saw the gameplay loop of it and just how much it kind of reduced really awful shit to a stat, like to an RPG status effect. And it just sat very poorly with me.
Yeah, just didn't pass the vibe check. So we're not calling out the creator or anything. Mm-hmm. Not saying that it is artless or what have you. Mm-hmm. It's just not for us.
Yeah,
I think. So I have a vague interest. Like I will watch if Super Eye Patch Wolf puts out a video on the second one. Mm-hmm. Second game in the series, I'll gladly watch it, but they're not for me. But it was very close. Mm-hmm. And big thank you to, you know, the patron was very understanding. We were like, hey, we're gonna do something different mm-hmm. Than this. They were very understanding. We did make an honest attempt at it though.
Yes.
Yeah. Naveen says, I have a cat that loves to sit on my lap anytime I'm on the couch, which makes me truly blessed. However, it has changed how I game, holding my controller a foot above my lap to allow space for the cute little guy. I've even taken to subconsciously holding that same position even when he doesn't want to cuddle. Do your cats affect your gaming habits at all?
If the cat loves you, it will let you rest your hands on it while you play.
Yeah.
And yes,
you can go to the bathroom and the cat will play for you for a little bit.
Just make sure you struggling stay with alive.
The boss, give it to the cat and the cat will take care of it for you. And then you can start playing again after they do that part for you.
Cats don't affect my gaming habits. Really. Greta will affect my working habits in the late morning. If I am on my computer here, she will stand in front of me, wanting to be held. You know, to be held, not like a baby, not with her belly up, but she just wants to be kind of be held in my arms, kind of like a football, and have her little belly tickled. And she will stay there forever if you let her, and if you put her down, she'll just stand up there. So I don't schedule anything really important for that time. Mostly the cats just sit on the couch and watch. They get real interested. Sometimes they'll get freaked out and run up to the screen and start like, you know, doing their there's a bird at the window kind of face to it. But that's it.
Generally they do not very much for me. Pocket doesn't. He's been on a real tip of not letting me read a physical book in bed, which is obnoxious.
Does he want to just like sit on your chest in front of you? Like
just wants to grab that space in front of me, and that feels bad. And I have to kick him out if I want to read. I can read my iPad.
Weird.
So it's been influencing my habits.
And the final link, KL asks, what are your favorite cover songs?
I have a great question. You sound like you had an answer.
Ockerville River works a cover of Sloop John B into a song called John Allen Smith Sails. That's about the death of John Berryman, or the suicide death of John Berryman. Really good.
I like a deconstructionist cover a lot. So like the legendary one of those, there are examples, Working at the Coal Mine by Devo, or Satisfaction by Devo, which are weird twitchy covers of very steady songs. I think those are fun. There's a good, really good Dinosaur Jr. version of Just Like Heaven. That I think is great. So those are some favorites.
some favorites. Don't know about total favorites, but some favorites.
Yeah. And then for me, like, my favorite, all time favorite covers also, I prefer them to the original.
Yeah.
A lot of time. So I think about, REM's Crazy versus Pylon's Crazy.
Oh yeah.
I like REM's version much better. I like REM's version of Favorite Writer better than the, Magnapop. Yeah.
So. I guess also on REM, you could say Superman.
Yeah. I like that version of that. I like their version of that more. Like quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now moving on to the topic.
I will read this here. Andrew writes, "Hey guys, discussion prompt suggestion for you. With Darkest Dungeon 2 and Tears of the Kingdom out lately, what's your take on sequels? Between Mission Packs, Hitman 2, Elaborations, Dishonored 2, and Reinventions, RE7, what do you look for in a sequel? Are there games that had the wrong kind of sequels for you, underselling what you loved about the originals? Are sequels worthwhile for you versus spiritual successors or other kinds of follow-ups? And when does the Bonfire Side Chat extended coverage of The Surge 2 start?"
So sequels. Sequel chat. I feel like we've talked about this before, but that's fine. Like we can revisit some stuff. Especially the gaming landscape has changed.
It has. And also, like, you know, this is a bit of a, if, I feel like if we have very specifically talked about this, it needs to exist in conversation also with our Let It Die.
Kind of
instinct on some of this, which is don't keep a zombie franchise around, kill it and let those people free to go make stuff that, you know, that will
is dead. Let it die. Yeah.
To go make stuff that may embody some of what we loved about those, in the original. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I do want things to die. I also paradoxically, because I'm complicated and everyone's complicated. If I really love a game and the game has not been done to death, a mission pack style sequel will make me very happy actually.
Yes.
I think those get a bad name, in general. Like there are plenty of games where I just want more of the same.
Yeah.
For it. I was pickled, to play Miles Morales, tickled. Not pickled. I will be tickled and pickled to play Spider-Man 2 just because that was really fun and I could do with a second one. Yeah. Would I think that once we got down to like Spider-Man 4?
No, probably not.
Probably
would
not.
Would you think that if Spider-Man 2 came out in 2020 or in 2021? Like, absence makes the heart grow fonder. I'm about ready for a full Spider-Man sequel, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of more what determines my personal like, as opposed to, and we're putting aside like a gigantic meta topic about stagnation in IPs and creative work in general, which is a big discourse topic that can get really exhausting to me. One thing, this comes up in games, it comes up in movies where people bemoan sequels. I was telling you recently about that YouTube channel, Vampire Robot. Which is just old B-roll from TV. Oh,
I shared that with Chris, and both of us are like pigs and shit with it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. There's tons of them for movies and movie premieres, like at the Multiplex 2001 and stuff. And everything on the marquee is also a sequel.
Yep.
You know, it doesn't feel as new as kind of Chicken Little folk are saying. Than it is with games and movies to me. It feels like it's kind of the way it's been. It doesn't mean that it's always virtuous or always okay. I guess I'm saying it by way of that discussion is related to this, but I don't have a whole lot to say about it because I think that the case is largely overstated.
Every generation of kids thinks that they invented being disappointed with the lack of originality in mass market media.
Yeah,
that's just my riff on every generation kids thinks they invented blowjobs, right? Like it just it just goes in cycles. We're around.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think one of my favorite sequels, and this is a kind of sequel that you don't really see, is the whatever is embodied in Assassin's Creed Brotherhood. Well, I've got no care for Assassin's Creed 3, you know, or, mm-hmm. you know, really any of the other ones that were in different cities or what have you. Mild interest in some of the big open world ones, but I think that ship has sailed. But like specifically taking Assassin's Creed 2, that character and that period of time, and then just saying, here's a new city. Here's a new city with a like a complete overhaul to the combat system, and also this kind of economic sim where you are restoring Rome and buying these buildings and businesses, you know, to run them and expand the Assassin Empire. Like it's mm-hmm. somewhere in between a mission pack sequel and a full sequel. It's like a literal sequel because it continues Ezio's story, but it's not a full new game where it's a new engine and like a huge escalation. In a few ways, it's even smaller than Assassin's Creed 2 is because it is just Rome as opposed to a whole bunch of different cities kind of spanning a whole country kind mm-hmm. of deal. Yeah, that is a weird category of product that I would like to see, something that's almost like a 1.5 like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are welcome.
Yeah.
Like I like that kind of thing quite a bit. There's been a couple like interesting, so like in the list that Andrew brings up, mm-hmm. you know, of different kinds of sequels, bring up mission packs with Hitman, and that's fair, right? Like there are advancements in Hitman 3, mm-hmm. Between Hitman 3 and Hitman 1, but they're really minor.
Yeah.
You know, those are mission packs and it's fine because all the joy is in the level. Elaborations with Dishonored 2, also fair. But then they are reinventions with Resident Evil 7. Resident Evil is constantly doing that.
Yeah.
With reinvention. It's hard to even think of them in terms of a typical sequel kind of structure almost. Like Resident Evil 7 is a sequel to mm-hmm. Resident Evil 6. We know it is. They've got a numerical relationship.
Yeah.
In another way, it's kind of not. Like what would be if Resident Evil 7 just decided to be called Resident Evil 1 and reboot? Mm-hmm. It'd be annoying because that kind of thing is annoying, but it wouldn't be out of place. It wouldn't be incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that a reboot is another kind of sequel, and Resident Evil does it all the time.
I mean, they have like, movements, right? Like it broadly goes in trilogies, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where we have that. So it's almost like once you start a new movement, it's almost barely like a sequel
mm-hmm.
to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about Darkest Dungeon 2. Mm-hmm. I've been playing the shit out of it since it's out as a really, really interesting sideways sequel. Yeah. It would have been very easy to do a mission pack and elaboration and them trying to drill down to the same feelings and kind of gameplay scenarios you get through mm-hmm. kind of a sideways simplified fashion.
Yeah.
Through that has been really interesting. It is. I think it's one of the more canny pieces of game design mm-hmm. I've seen in a couple of years.
Yeah.
Just taking it and comparing it to the first one in terms of taking inspiration from like a lot of different mediums. It is huge, like board game DNA, and mm-hmm. even more so than the first one.
Yeah.
And coming at the same goal from an entirely different perspective. So sometimes you can have a very similar goal, like the end game can be the same, and just get there an entirely different way. Like a sequel almost just has to share one thing.
Yeah.
You know, it can be continue the narrative. It can continue the mechanical legacy. It can continue carry the goal, like in the case of like a spiritual sequel or mm-hmm. something. But really to kind of qualify as a sequel or a sequel, you really only need one thread.
Yeah.
For it.
Yeah. And, you know, as far as which of those things you carry forward, it's always funny to see like cases where it tries to carry too much forward and ends up just trying to make it sequel by escalation. Like mm-hmm. we're probably going to cover God of War Ragnarok on here. Like I got that and I played it on I played like the opening to it. And then I just saw that it was similar, but just more and bigger. And I didn't. Of my complaints about the original, you know, not original, about God of War 2018, that I didn't see that there was too little or that this was too small. So it almost ends up addressing a concern or a problem that I have with it. I think just chase after that same audience again, but bigger this time, you know, mm-hmm. that ends up being kind of a mistake or makes for a less interesting product to me. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I think with Tears of the Kingdom, we are kind of seeing that you know, trying to aim and please people who want a bigger, brand new thing is not necessarily the way you want to go because, you know, people pissed and moaned about the fact that they were using reusing the Hyrule world map to a degree in mm-hmm. Tears of the Kingdom. All you have to do is play like 20 minutes of Tears of the Kingdom to realize that like that is the case, but that is not even 1/10 of the story there
in terms of it,
you know? So like basically what I'm saying is I don't want a sequel designed to piss off the fewest fans possible.
Which is an
instinct that I think, you know, developers who are sinking billion-dollar budgets into a game may not. I think that's an instinct that they fall to. Yeah.
It's something that Zelda falls to mm-hmm. consistently and thoroughly for about 20 years.
Yep.
Speaking of developers, like Tears of the Kingdom, Breath of the Wild are the outliers there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Traditionally there was a tweet that drove me nuts where somebody was like, you ever wonder why Zelda can continue to make games and they're at least very good? It's because they have the same team members on them. And I'm like, at least very good.
What the fuck shit have
you been playing? Like, I've been the doldrums for there's a long period in which those are shitty games.
Skyward Sword, my friend.
That's an awful video game. And a lot of people were like, well, if that's the minimum, that's still actually excellent and better than 80% of all video games. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like, you have to have some really weird narrow taste. That's being too conservative.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And like, you can be too way, way, way too conservative. Mm-hmm. And the thing about being conservative in a sequel is it's not something that happens in one,
mm-hmm.
you know, like you're allowed one,
mm-hmm.
like you get to make Link to the Past and then make Ocarina of Time.
Yeah.
Make the basically the same basic story with a light world, dark world, mm-hmm. Analog and stuff. You don't get to keep doing it though.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing with, we're talking about Spider-Man. Like I'm in the mood for Spider-Man 2. I wouldn't be if we were on Spider-Man 4. Or if it only been a couple of years, like you have to dole. If you're going to be conservative, like you can reinvent's great. It's mm-hmm. hard. It's expensive. If you're going to be conservative, you have to keep your powder dry on that shit.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're Far Cry. And mm-hmm. what a fucking nightmare. All you do is make games that like literally disappear in the blink of an eye.
Mm-hmm.
When is the last time? Do you know people who don't know that Far Cry 6 came out? I assure you do. Like, that came and went.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, man. If you were to startle me and wake me up in the middle of the night and be like, did Far Cry 6 come out? I'd be like, not yet. It's coming though. it didn't make a splash. Nobody mm-hmm. gives a shit. You don't want to end up in that situation.
No, not at all.
Yeah. So, yeah. In general, like what makes a good sequel is, iteration up to a point
mm-hmm.
and then revolution if it is good.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah. I don't know. Good sequel needs to recognize, you know, kind of the core of what was, you know, best and satisfying, about the original, recognize that, maybe there was an end result that we wanted and the way the player felt or reacted to this that we didn't solve for. So let's try and solve for it again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I'm going to say something kind of interesting. I am almost never. Wait.
Sorry. Something kind of interesting. Sounds like a Twitter shit post.
It does sound like a Twitter shit post. It's just kind of okay. Something that is non-intuitive is what I meant to say. I'm going to say something non-intuitive.
Okay.
When it comes to a sequel, the absolute last thing I care about is continuing the story.
Oh yeah.
The narrative. Because to me, a game, it tells a complete story. A good game, you know, has a satisfying narrative mm-hmm. from beginning to end. I'm not like, if let's say I was somebody who's going to pick up Forbidden West, it wouldn't because I want to see what happens to Aloy.
No. You know? I want to see more like, robo dinos, different kinds of robo dinos.
And new scenarios and stuff. I need that novelty. I know Aloy. I know mm-hmm. what happened to Aloy. That was like a good, Aloy lives in my imagination. Aloy's fine. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, I've never picked up a Resident Evil game because I want to know what happens to Chris and Jill.
No.
You know, I want to know the new world state. I want to know how the macro plot continues, but mostly just weird shit presented to me. Mm-hmm. Like I want to go, that ride is secondary. I never want to see the continuing of a plot.
Yeah.
You know, it's an interesting thing because you think in movies, it's different.
Yeah.
You know, in movies, a lot of times I do want to see the conclusion of this character. You know, you watch, you get to the end of John Wick and there's still more John Wick. Yes. Like that story feels like it can keep going. To me, with a video game, I don't care.
Yeah.
Like nobody's picking up another Zelda because they need to know what happens to Link next. It doesn't fucking matter. You know, he goes and rescues a kingdom. He collects a certain number of things. Then he goes and fights Ganon.
Yeah. The fact that anybody like cares about an overarching story or fucking timeline shit. Wild to me. Space alien
absolutely
behavior.
Wild. Yeah. Absolutely. Replicant shit.
Yeah.
It's surf shit. Caring about the Zelda timeline is absolute surf shit, dude.
Can I have some more, sir?
Yeah. I'm just like, well, we'll tell you. Here's a book about it. Buy it and read it. We explain it. Yeah. Yes, sir. Oh boy, the book, sir.
Yeah. That lack of like desire for something, you know, like continue the story of the same people. I mean, I feel exactly that same way, and it's what makes me think. It's what makes me feel very positive things about Pathologic 2, which is what if it wasn't just the same people, but the same situation again, but with different themes foregrounded. Right.
Yes.
Like understanding that like, yeah, the Bachelor and the Haruspex and the Changeling were all very well-drawn characters who had their reactions to the situation and represented these different philosophies. But like what brought you to this was the overall situation where they were parts of this system. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just that was such a wonderful move and kind of the only
facets
one that
of the system explored.
Yes.
Not somebody's personal story. Continued. Right.
Yeah.
Sequels,
man.
Some general thoughts on sequels. Thanks everybody for writing in. We appreciate you. If we haven't gotten to your topic specifically, we got another roundup coming up soon. Keep them coming. Keep an eye on the Patreon.
Please do. Also, don't feel bad if we didn't get to your response. Oh, wait, no.
Yes.
Oh, let's do this about this one. the next thing here. We're doing some responses. Please don't feel bad if we don't get to your response. I know that we say that all the time. But we can only get about like four responses in per game. Yeah. You know, usually aim in for about anywhere to between 12 and 15 responses. You know, it's just kind of the way linear time works for us. So apologies again. Don't feel like, there's any kind of slight inherent in that.
Yeah. We're doing our best.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're trying. We're going to throw the Norco stuff, after the break.
Yes.
For spoiler reasons, cause that's a big narrative game. So we're going to start off with your responses to this month's games, starting with the Bard's Tale, here. And I'll get us started here with the first one here. Kieran says, hey guys, another dad story. I wrote in about my dad's Crisis PC. I remember my dad getting very into the original Bard's Tale and spending hours upon hours grinding for a special item called the Horn of Heavens or some shit. And when he finally got it, I remember him going to the final challenge dungeon and dealing 100,000 damage to like 10 minutes of enemies. Text would just scroll by like goblin takes 100,000 damage, 10 gold acquired, like that for a while. I think that's part of where my love for D&D, Magic, Dark Souls, and general fantasy comes from. I never got around to playing it, but seeing the cool fantasy areas my dad would traverse really imprinted that sort of thing as something dear to me. That's very funny.
God, the language in that. I'm just in love with the way that Kieran decided to talk about this. Yeah, the Horn of Heavens or some shit. Like 10 minutes of goblins.
Like 10 minutes of enemies. Yeah. 10 minutes of enemies is a powerful phrase. I really like that. Easily create zones of 10 minutes of enemies.
God. Dang.
That's great.
that's a good dad story, man. Bard's Tale would be a very much a dad game.
Oh yeah, you put that on a long ship. Yeah.
Ooh.
And then like you just like lift up anchor as soon as they get on.
Uh-huh.
You Shanghai'd yourself a dad. You know. Yeah, get a bunch of 486 computers lined up in the brig of a galley, and then you just send dads out to sea.
Yeah. Sales made a floppy disk sewn together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Goodbye, dads.
rigging made of SCSI cables. We could do this all.
Yeah. This is great. Let's create the CompuShip. The dad ship CompuShip.
Vivian writes, I picked this up last year and was very surprised at how little discussion there was about this game. Well, at least this version. I think referring to the remake in particular. I had a lot of fun taking my paladins, Bone Crusher Betty and L'Oreal Paris through the game. Sorry, L'Oreal Paris
is a very funny, that's a great name for a character, for a paladin. Like, I imagine the logo just being on her armor.
L'Oreal Paris.
If it's my old enemy, Maybelline.
Oh no, here come the Avon ladies.
That's great.
Oh man. They continue. I have a suspicion that Gary is going to get to the Wizard's Tower dungeon, rage at the spin traps, no magic zones, and darkness, and look up what squares to teleport to beat the dungeon. That's what I did too. Fuck that place. They really double down on that kind of bullshit in the second and third entries, so I quit after the first one and don't feel like I lost anything for it. It's weird. It's weird how they put in a bunch of dungeon bullshit to circumvent the really powerful tools like Phase Door, a Port Arcane, and Trap Zap. But that's just an example of how far game design has come.
Yeah, that was irritating.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't rage specifically at that because my rage had already kind of been beaten into submission.
Yeah.
You know, and also, again, I cannot stress this enough. I ran out of YouTubes to watch playing this. I just had, I caught up on all the YouTubes, even stuff I ordinarily don't watch. You know, I just have subscribed to. Yeah. So I just had that in and kind of went into a weird fugue state.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. It's kind of a bummer because, like, I mean, Kyle Aaron's Tower is the best dungeon in that game. So yeah. Like the rage would happen any other place where teleport traps are. Kyle Aaron's dungeon at least had like discrete zones with actual like elements of their design that they were foregrounding.
Yeah. There's gimmicks. There's thoughts to it.
Yeah.
So, John says, old school blobbers are dear to my heart, so thanks for doing the Bard's Tale episode. That's probably a terrible entry point to these, though. As far as I know, the Bard's Tale games are kind of maligned, even among genre enthusiasts. Bard's Tale 4 tries some interesting things, but the technical execution is god-awful. Runs badly, looks like garbo, etc. Your mileage may vary. I know these games are probably dead to you now, but I'll still sing the praises of Might and Magic 4 and 5. They combine into one mega game, The World of Xeen. The combat is very breezy. There are no random encounters. You can see creatures on the field, and you can hit them from afar with spells and bows and such, and there's no grinding. In fact, you can't grind without cheesing the game in some weird way. Enemies take forever to respawn, years of game time, I believe.
Oh, wow.
I got into these games fairly late, but Xeen is still a favorite. The earlier Might and Magic games are rough, and the later are janky in ways I figure modern players can't stomach, but Xeen still goes down easy. There's something weird about these types of games that scratches an itch I can't even articulate. Even old Wizardries, etc., have a mysterious feel to them that I can't really get elsewhere. Also, a thumbs up for the Etrian games, although the grinding and random encounters can get extremely tedious in those. I never noticed the Gasm sound you mentioned. It might be in one of the newer ones I've never played. The old ones had some horny character sprites in town, but nothing egregious beside that.
Yeah.
I don't know which entry has the Gasms. Will just told me, and Will loves those games and wants me to play them. He was not poisoning a chalice.
That's exactly what he was trying to do.
Well, no, he was showing me a thing because he cares about me and doesn't want me to get tricked.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You know, he was like, hey, just so you know, check this out. And he also doesn't want his characters to come on the screen. He's just like, look at this bullshit. You know, okay, there's a little, are you seeing the shit, man?
Okay.
But if you know, he's a fan, I guess is my point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, I'm curious about those remakes when those come out. I wish they weren't priced so badly.
Yeah.
It's like, you get it, you know, as a collection of remakes, they're selling each as a full product, which whatever. I just don't.
Yeah, it's a little bit silly.
A little bit silly.
I wish I had the gene that enjoyed mapping
mm-hmm.
like that. I don't have the genetics for it. I can do it. Mm-hmm. You know, but it doesn't add a whole lot to me.
Yeah. I don't know. It's nostalgic for me. I was going through my, some stuff and I still have like a folder with, maps of EverQuest zones that I made mm-hmm. before they added, mapping and stuff. Mm-hmm. Both maps that I drew and also maps that I like downloaded from, like alakazam.com, you know? And then, did my own like markup and annotation on. I don't know. I think it's a gene thing. It's a cilantro.
It's nostalgic for me too. I just don't want to do it now.
Oh yeah.
Like it died in me. Like, do you still enjoy doing it? Or do you just have the, like, you used to like doing it?
No, I still enjoy doing it. It's just a matter of time. Like, I didn't do it for Bard's Tale because, you know, I'm already playing that on a deadline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think World of Xeen, that might have been one of the ones that I played that was ported to Genesis that I played through completely. Xeen seems familiar to me. And again, I remember enjoying it.
I don't think it doesn't list that it was ported to Genesis. Maybe a version of it was.
I just thought maybe it's something else of Xeen.
Mm-hmm.
That word Xeen is very familiar. So, and I don't have deep catalog with Might and Magic.
Yeah.
So I thought, soon there may be connected.
Hmm. And then David, who, was the executive producer of the Bard's Tale episode. I think we credited him as DWG.
That's how David wrote it as initially, but is written as David.
I think I'm on the older end of the WAF cohort. I'm a little older than Gary. Between that, being Australian, and happenstance, my formative game experience wasn't with Nintendo or Sega, but home computers and early PCs. I never had a console until decades later, and to this day, I've not played any Zelda, any Final Fantasy, and barely any Mario. I've played some games on our ZX Spectrum, on friends' Commodore 64s, and later on our IBM PC clone. None of them made much impression until the Bard's Tale, which I would have encountered in 87 or 88. A friend had it on their Amstrad home computer, and I then bought the PC version. Popular Games reported it to a heap of systems in those days. At the time, the visuals seemed impressive, though they were less so on our PC. We had a green screen monitor, which made interpreting the on-screen compass and it made interpreting the on-screen compass a particular challenge, memorizing which slightly differently textured green blobs meant which direction. It was my first RPG of any kind. I didn't play D&D until a decade later either. Whether it was the visuals, exploration, or the power fantasy of slinging spells, it was the coolest thing ever to me. I bought the two sequels as soon as possible and traded maps and clues with friends at school. I still have a folder of all the maps hand-drawn on graph paper. Of course, looking back and replaying, I can see the flaws. There's all the random encounters and grinding. I must have massacred those 400 berserkers dozens of times. 10 minutes of berserkers. That was the style of the time, and the 2017 master mitigated it a bit. The scant plot is very generic. There's little tactical choice in combat, and something like half of the huge spells list is pretty useless. But for me, it will always have that nostalgic glow, like Final Fantasy does for many others. Gary, do you want to hit these stray observations here?
I will hit some stray observations. We'll tag team this. Some stray observations. The Bard's Tale 2 acknowledges the tedium of always recasting exploration buffs by adding Batch Spell, which did all of them, as a first level spell of the new Archmage class. That's
great. I feel really deprived that they didn't bring that to the remake and
kind
the
of surprise. Yeah, they didn't backport it, given that they backported so many things. Bard's Tale 2's plot is barely more substantial than Bard's Tale 1, though it does add more puzzles. The Bard's Tale 3 is a notable step up in plot and a big step up in variety of puzzle mechanics. Weirdly, the PC port had a worse UI, though. The Bard's Tale construction set was, alas, pretty disappointing. It performed poorly, just moving around was much slower than the other games, and the scripts were limited and tedious to set up. And the 2004 ARPG is weird. It's pretty meh overall, as well as being weirdly horny. It has nothing to do with the old games, except for a handful of allusions. There's the name, obviously, and the place it and the fact it included an emulated version of the old games. More strangely, though, all its place names are from the Orkney Isles, which also contains the real-life Neolithic village of Scarhabray. I knew that Scarhabray was real because of reading the CRPG Addict and seeing that they included it in Ultima.
It was the same advisor who like consulted on both of those games and said, oh, Scarabray, and both teams separately were like, oh yeah, that's a cool place. Cool name for a place.
Yeah, thank you, David. David also shared with me the maps that they had made as a kid, and those are a joy.
Oh yeah,
to look nice. At. Like, as much as I don't like mapping now, I love looking at a handmade map.
Yeah,
they're really fun, and it was really cool to see them and recognize level geometry. And he's just like, oh, I know that place. That's fucking weird. Huh. Like, yeah. Yeah, I spent a lot of time in that zone.
Huh. Yeah. Nice. I'm happy to hear the memories, especially from a different country and from somebody who's, you know, a person who plays games who does not come from the standard background of, oh, I love Final Fantasy and Mario.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, like, oh, I ain't played them shits. Okay. Yeah.
I don't find the Bard's Tale nostalgia any less dignified than Final Fantasy nostalgia.
No.
I don't think this game holds up appreciably worse than Final Fantasy 1.
No.
They're basically the same. You know, none of that stuff holds up very well to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's all very primitive.
Yeah.
You know, so. Yeah.
But thank you for writing in, and thank you for back in the episode.
Appreciate it very much.
Yeah. I'll pick up here on Bowser's Fury. Naveen says, I personally have been a bit perplexed by all the sugar folks talk about Bowser's Fury. Not that I don't think it's great, but rather it felt like more of the same to me from Mario Odyssey, except with a very annoying Kaiju Bowser to mess up my progress seemingly every minute. Aside from that, it's a fantastic open world Mario game that takes the lessons from Odyssey and brings it forward. You probably address whether you find the Bowser attacks additive or not in the show, and I look forward to hearing that discussed. But what other lessons do you hope Nintendo utilizes in the next big Mario release? Don't make it big.
We talk about that a lot in the episode.
Yeah.
You know, what we'd want to see come forward. Someday we have to do Odyssey.
Yes.
Because I feel very conflicted about that game. Mm-hmm. And it would be, you know, a couple of people in the Slack also mentioned that this felt like more of the same from Odyssey. Mm-hmm. And doing them both, I think, will be useful to me to articulate what the difference is.
Yeah.
I don't hate Odyssey. I think it's like a B. I had fun playing it, you know, but it did leave me wanting like a lot. I had a lot of problems with it. And I think that they're all things that Bowser's Fury doesn't do in a general sense.
No.
It's a collectathon. You know, and again, I this isn't the right word, but it's just an insult that's been coming to my mind lately. Mm-hmm. Collectathons are kind of surf shit.
No.
You know, the game's like, hey, collect all these things, and you're like, yes, sir.
You can ask for more.
Yeah, you can ask for more. You don't have to just do the thing because the game said it. You know, you can have a quest. You can have an authored experience. You know, you can have a not just picking up a thing. You know, about, you know, Odyssey is constantly like, oh, hey, go sit at that bench. And you do, and you watch like a 10-second long moon animation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't do anything for this.
Yeah.
Wait, why are you applauding me?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's real surf shit.
Yeah. It'd be weird for Mario to give you like a quest to make like a whole big thing, but like Bowser's Fury gives you fun. It gives you fun courses, you know?
Yeah.
Like
a course rather than a quest. You know, like go get to the top of this thing without being able to see the walls is like a quest in that, you know, it's a activity, you know, it's not a task. It's not go sit down or go just light all four torches. Mm-hmm. You know, it is a little engagement, a little challenge.
I feel like Gordon, our next response, actually articulates this really well.
Yeah.
Well, what we're trying to say here.
Response.
Yeah.
Gordon says, Bowser's Fury gave me everything that I felt I was lacking in Mario Odyssey, which was the primal joy of the core Mario gameplay, where Mario Odyssey was made up of set pieces where you'd press a contextual button and do a cool thing. Bowser's Fury, you were the one in control and doing the cool things yourself. It felt like a return to the Mario 64 that exists only in my nostalgia, and it's the first game in a long time that I bothered to 100%. I did that simply because I enjoyed every second of it. If this is a trial run of things to come, then I will be very happy with the future of the series.
Same. Yeah. And I agree with Gordon here. You know, when it comes to Odyssey, like I didn't beat Odyssey. I played probably like 3 or 4 worlds of it before I fell off. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is, I think, at the heart of what gave Bowser's Fury. And I think what gives, you know, something like 3D World in general or 3D Land, the propulsion that the bigger kind of spectacle of Odyssey didn't give me. Yeah.
Some people really like being set in the middle of a world and told to collect things.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, I know
we will have to do something to crush them.
Yeah. I know I keep calling it surf shit. I hope that people understand that's tongue in cheek, at least a little bit.
Yeah,
different things drive different people who play games. Mm-hmm. For me, I would much rather have an obstacle course I have to do than a nothing.
Yeah.
To get more things, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, it's, see also Breath of the Wild, Korok yeah. seeds, you know, like the, so littering your game with very, very easy tasks, no matter how big the world is not, to me, is not good no. game design.
Man, the Korok stuff in Tears of the Kingdom is so good.
I've heard it's improved.
Yeah.
I'm curious.
Mm-hmm.
So
the mummy's ready for his magical journey.
Yeah. Changing it from just being like, it sounds like night and day.
Oh yeah.
The thing that I'm bracing for with Tears of the Kingdom, like when I eventually play it, mm-hmm. is the frustrating thing. And I don't know if people realize this, is that everyone who is like, this is a masterpiece mm-hmm. and a brand new thing. A lot of those people were also saying that about Breath of the Wild.
Mm-hmm.
So it ends up being like, I understand with you because I trust you, you yeah. know, and I know your gaming taste. Like, I understand that you are acknowledging the differences mm-hmm. between those. In terms of general response, though, it ends up feeling kind of weird and uncanny, you know, like just this,
it's
like,
happening again.
Like, yeah, this is the real one. Like, I know I said that about Breath of the Wild, and their Korok seeds were, here's five rocks and one of them's out of the way. What if you put it down? A foot different, and then watch the Korok seed animation, and there's 900 of them.
Yeah.
But now it's good, you know. It makes it feel very incredulous a little bit.
Yeah, to hear them bagging on Breath of the Wild, which was pure genius front to back, according to them, just 6 years ago.
Yes,
that's not a long time. That is not a long time.
It's not a long time at all. This was been fun to listen to Will talk about it, because Will's like, yeah, I hated Breath of the Wild, but I really like this, and it mm-hmm. like that is the most powerful recommendation I've had for it, because
yeah.
it, you know, I don't know. Breath of the Wild was fine. It was good mm-hmm. game, but just, you know, you got to acknowledge its problems. I want it to be improved. If it's not better than that, I don't care.
Yeah. It's a Wile E. Coyote simulator is how I'm playing it. Yeah.
It sounds a lot goofier, which is cool. I think that, my prediction based on playing is there'll become a point where that will wear off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's on me, not on the game. Like, I don't have unlimited fun doing Kerbal Space Program, Nuts and Bolts, Gary's mm-hmm. Mod, you know, stuff. That's not something that spends forever
for
me, but it spends for a good long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so looking forward to that.
Doug says, Bowser's Fury was a treat that came along for me at just the right time. I'm an attorney, and I was in the middle of nowhere for a trial where nothing was going our way. Almost every ruling the judge could make was not only against us, but bafflingly and demonstrably wrong. It was easily one of the most demoralizing situations of my entire career. While I had very little downtime during the ordeal, I brought my Switch to decompress at the end of the night. And at that time, Bowser's Fury was the game du jour. Taking my old friend Mario out for a delightful spin through the manageably sized open world was refreshing both for me and the franchise. So for this taxing period, Bowser's Fury was a well-needed ray of sunshine. Not Super Mario Sunshine, though. F that game. Thanks for the great podcasting, as always. Another needed palliative while driving the 2.5 hours to and from that ass kicking.
Damn.
Yeah.
Got your ass handed to you in court.
I'm happy that both Bowser and the podcast could be there for you.
Yeah. We team up.
another collab
we got going. Bowser X Duckfeed, as they call them all now.
Bowser Cross Duck Feed, please.
Oh, there we go. I appreciate it, Doug. finally, on Bowser's Fury, Luke says, I recently completed a run of playing through all of the Mario platformers, which I started for the 35th anniversary. It culminated in my playing Bowser's Fury for the first time. Having heard a lot of chat about an open world Mario, I didn't really see the point. But when I got my hands on it and played it, I understood that the real purpose of the single large world was to provide a playground for a kaiju-sized Koopa and Ultra Mario to battle him. Once I understood that, I was fully on board. For me, the only shortcoming of the game was that it was a little tied to the slightly more rigid controls and level design of 3D World, rather than more elastic and analog movement of Odyssey, Galaxy, and other full 3D Marios. As a capper to the Mario Marathon, it was sublime, and I'm intrigued to see what comes next.
I could see somebody being disappointed going from Odyssey to Bowser's Fury, that it did have the diminished moveset. I think that, I don't know, it didn't bother me too much because I'm not bothered by the diminished moveset, but that is a point of pain that I can understand somebody feeling.
Yes. I've never been that for 3D Marios. Mm-hmm. Like, I watch people do it and they get really into very expressive movement and they almost play them like Tony Hawk. You know, I just don't do that for them. I definitely understand disliking that.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. So here's the spoiler wall for Norco. If you don't want to hear Norco get spoiled, don't listen to this next section.
Do we want to do the admin now or do we want to?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Let's do the admin now. There's not a whole lot of Norco responses, but just in case.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks everybody for writing in. We appreciate you.
Mm-hmm.
If you have things to say about June's games, write in at duckfeed.tv/contact. The first thing is a live episode about 7 out of 10 games. So if you have very good 7 out of 10 game recommendations or stories, write in. Also Infernax, Pentiment, and the RE4 remake.
Kind of a banger month.
Real banger month. Yeah. Have you tried the Konami code on Infernax?
No, I have not.
Start a new game and put in the Konami code. Okay. You will like it. You don't have to play the whole game again. I probably don't have time to play the whole game again. But you will smile a lot. At least play through the first couple bosses.
Okay.
Not the first couple castles, just the intro.
Yeah.
Tutorial bosses. Get to the castle. Get to
Rainbow Jacks. I've kind of got a bit of an appetite to do an evil playthrough on Infernax.
I thought about that too. I like that game a lot.
It's so good.
In different years, that would be my favorite game that I played this year. It's just a really banger year.
Yeah.
So far, like, that game is really good.
I kind of picked that at random, having heard good stuff about it, you know, just kind of a Hail Mary pass.
I'm mad that we waited.
To see like, that.
Yeah. I was expecting it to be like just visual stuff. Like I was expecting better than this because I didn't like this game very much. I was expecting Carrion.
Oh yeah.
You know, like something like with really expressive and impressive sprite work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. I did not expect it to be as fun of a video game and funny as it is. The game's fucking hilarious. I love that game.
I guess I need to work on my conversation skills.
It's so good. It's so hilariously bleak. I love that game so much.
Oh man. So that's a preview of that episode. But that's just June. That we also have games that we're talking about in July and we are ready to announce those. July, the first game we're doing is Burnout Paradise, a game that we've wanted to do for a while. And, somebody gave us the excuse, executive produced it.
Yeah. Yeah. Really excited about that. We haven't done a straight up racing game. We've only done a Mario racing game.
Mm-hmm.
I know this isn't quite a straight up racing game. I know Burnout Paradise is a little bit, it's closer to an arcade racer than, you know, a serious like F1 game or something. But I'm really excited because I don't have very much cachet. In that genre really at all. So I'm really looking forward to vroom vroom. Go fast, good drive.
shiny car smash.
I really am looking forward to it. That's gonna feel great. Second game that month is also executive produced, and that's gonna be Jack 2 of the Jack and Daxter fame. Okay, you see, you didn't say anything. It made me think, I'm so used to the verbalum hmms, and for PS2 mascot platformers, I don't know very much. I need them. This will be great because I always get these confused with Ratchet and Clank. So now we'll have done one of each.
We will.
And I'm excited.
It's the grim dark sequel that kind of goes open world a little bit.
Nice.
I'm curious about it. This is a series that I don't know. Jack. I don't have an awful lot of experience with this series. I think I played a demo for Jack and Daxter. Curious about this. And then the final episode of that month, the premium episode is going to be The Legend of Zelda Cadence of Hyrule.
Yeah. It's a Gary pick. It is, has some roguelike elements, but really it just has Dark Souls checkpoints. Don't be scared. It is a, we're catching that Zelda heat by doing the hot new Zelda release. Cadence of Hyrule, which, I like a lot. I think it's cute and good. I never fucked around with the DLC. Which one I do? The name of the merchant in it is Freddie Merchantry. He sings. It's great.
That's really dumb.
Yeah, it's very fun. It is a love letter to Zelda iconography, mm-hmm. and is in the short list of games similar to Chocobo's Dungeon that uses a long running franchise as a libretto for a different genre.
Yeah,
which is a gaming phenomenon I'm interested in.
Yes,
I think that is a cool thing that games can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am like I played and I think I did like the first dungeon or something in this, mm-hmm. and I'm excited to have an excuse to go and do more of it. For anybody who's unaware, this is the Crypt of the Necrodancer people making a rhythm roguelike kind of esque thing, less roguelike than Crypt of the Necrodancer. It's basically taking Crypt of the Necrodancer play and putting Zelda in it.
Yeah. There's not really very much roguelike in it. Like you die and you spend gems to get new items, but mm-hmm. you respawn, bosses stay dead. You respawn at bonfires basically that you can teleport between.
Mm-hmm.
It is a combination, rhythm, rogue in that enemies only move when you do,
mm-hmm.
if you move on the beat rather, and rhythm game. It's really neat. And there's lots of puzzles in it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what we're doing in July. If you have thoughts about those games, again, the deadline is July 15th.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a non-straight, non-white, non-cis, non-male creator, and you have a project you'd like us to highlight, please send me an email at gary@duckfeed.tv. Include your pronouns, include stuff about your project so I can check it out.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd be happy to highlight it.
Yeah. Two of those games that we announced coming up, Resident Evil 4 and Cadence of Hyrule, those are premium episodes. To get the full versions of those, you can join our Patreon. It's patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Get those episodes in full and also get access to a whole bunch of bonus content.
Yes, absolutely. And please leave us ratings, reviews on Apple Podcast or Podcast Addict. Tell your friends. Yeah, do all those things. You know the things to support podcasts. They help us, and we like it when you do them.
Mm-hmm. Also, we would last but not least like to thank Gwen, our producer, who is currently about halfway through her tour with her band, the Trash Sound Conglomerate.
Yeah, we really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's move on and let's do our Norco
responses here. Let's Nork it up.
Yeah. Nork, Norkadelphia.
Mm-hmm. Get started here with Jürgen, who writes, "You know, fellas, not liking things because they're popular is not a substitute for having a personality. Fuck you."
Yes. I'm really surprised you include that, because usually you don't put confrontational things in there. And I don't know, maybe you thought maybe, so I'm surprised you put that and then surprised you put fuck you, because I assume that you wanted to either, like, you thought they were joking, you like knew something we didn't know. Or I didn't know, or that you were gonna, you know, respond to it seriously. But fuck you is pretty appropriate to that.
Yeah,
I can't tell if they're joking. But I, you know, they should know that when they write something in a text field.
Yeah. Also, the last name that they gave, normally we don't read full names. Jürgen Maturity.
Yeah. That's it's the name of like a discredited Jehudi. Sort of the Enders 3.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't just dislike it because it's popular. We gave a whole reason. We recorded for like 2 hours.
Yeah, we talked about it for our 2 hours.
Yeah.
That is a really frustrating accusation.
Yeah.
As a critic, because I know we said this before, cannot stress this enough. Nothing good comes of us not liking popular stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All that happens is psychic damage.
Yep.
And it doesn't help us.
Right.
Like, we don't put out big clickbaity things. Like, if we were weaponizing that or using it as a marketing thing, we'd be on YouTube for one, because that's what they do over there on YouTube.
Yeah.
And we'd have like a big clickbait title that was like Game of the Year, Not So Fast, you know, and then, yeah, that would be it. But instead we played it and we just talked about how we felt about it for a couple hours.
So we get nothing from it personally, and also there isn't some fucking conspiracy. George Soros isn't
help us financially either. It doesn't help us in terms of popularity. Like, it doesn't help.
Yeah.
And anyway, what would be the motivation?
Uh-huh.
You know, substitute for having a personality. Like, there's all kinds of popular shit we like.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's such a craven.
And that's coming from frequent stan of Marvel movies, Gary Butterfield.
Yeah. I'm constantly talking about, it's like, I liked Ant-Man 3, motherfucker.
Uh-huh.
I'm like the only person on the planet. It's me and Jeremy Greer, and that's it. Yeah. So I don't know. It's I don't mind being criticized or made fun of, but it should be accurate.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like inaccurate things said are always frustrating.
Yeah. And also respond to the things we say, not the things that you pretend that we say.
Yeah.
I apologize for putting this in because this is real navel gazy, not the kind of thing I usually include in this, but it's kind of cathartic because like it's been a while since like we got something straight up like that outside of a review, which I don't read, or an exit survey, which I don't read. So,
So anywho, silly. Julia says, I wish the back half of Norco wasn't full of answers that I think are lazy and wrong. Oh, the character that's mysterious kind of just turns out to be a mentally ill houseless dude. Oh, the cult is just a bunch of whiny dudes that in no way reflect the disaffected white youth the game is trying to comment on. Oh, the paramilitary are easily manipulated for bad adventure game quests. Oh, the alien just pieces out. Norco starts out as a Southern Gothic cyberpunk with a heavy dose of magical realism and a few dated references. Duck coin, anyone? And just triples and triples down on dated and poorly observed references until ends, and you wonder why anyone ever bothered to talk about it, much less create it. Cool cyberbird, though.
And so we're getting into something here. I agree with what Julia says about this.
Did you know that not liking things that are popular is no substitute for having a, sorry.
I hate to be the bearer of bad news, Julia, but this needs to be said. So I didn't just pick responses that kind of co-sign us. Like Gary, you can read the ones that I excluded just for, length, they're at the bottom there. You can either confirm or deny this. Everybody was kind of meh about this.
Everyone who wrote in. So that doesn't mean that there aren't people who love it, but everybody who wrote in was also mad. And maybe we cultivate an audience that has similar taste. Like, who knows, right?
Oh,
like the actual ontology of that, who gives a shit? Mm-hmm. But the, in general, people were pretty lukewarm on it who wrote in.
People who saw fit to write in were lukewarm about it. Yeah.
Julia, like the thing that Julia was talking about in the first paragraph, I think, is something, a different angle of the same problem that bugged me was that it didn't take some of the stuff seriously enough.
Yeah.
The big thing about the Gamergate analog, the reactionary white guy thing, not being scary and just being this figure of fun,
mm-hmm.
rubbed me the wrong way as well.
Yeah.
So people just, I really just think people were bowled over by it having a really strong sense of place
mm-hmm.
and being about things games typically aren't about.
Yeah.
Which
isn't nothing, but it's also not enough.
Yeah. Just really, really going nuts for a game that reaches in a way you don't see a lot. And you go into, we talked about this in the episode and we talked about this a few times, like the role or duty of a critic and like whether it's important or virtuous as a fan of a medium to champion things that take risks, even if they're unsuccessful.
Yeah.
Merely for the fact that they're taking risks. And like, typically I have come down on the side of no. By no means you have to hand it to something just for being outlandish or doing something unusual like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's worth commenting on that it's doing that, but it doesn't end up holistically, justifying a thing.
Yeah.
At least for me. And that's kind of the perspective that we have, but it'd be okay if you have a different perspective and plenty mm-hmm. of people do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What does Eric say? Eric says, "Welcome to Snatcher, Cajun style. Then robots is slithering up the crawd hats, making the spiciest robo mud bugs you ever seen. We put a couple of Zydeco musicians into cryogenic sleep. While they may have amnesia, they will never forget the sunrise over Lake Pontchartrain or the glory of the Huey P. Long Bridge." And like Snatcher, Norco is a game that I love while recognizing that its whole deal papers over pacing problems and a certain thematic shallowness. I grew up about 2 hours away from the real life Norco, and I think the game's success in capturing the feel of the Gulf Coast region raises it a full letter grade for anyone from the area. Yes, I do speak for everyone from there. We are a monolith. Source, me and one other dude I know.
A duolith.
I'm a big fan of the game's writing, but I have to admit that it is exhausting sitting through that level of purple prose for too long. While I thoroughly enjoyed every 30-minute session, there's a reason my playtime only consisted of 30-minute sessions. But where Norco failed me was its ending. A wet, okay, that's where you were going with this. Thump, marking the end of something that I had otherwise been loving. Some of my favorite media range wide and far in subject matter. I like it when a jest be infinite or a vil be Nash, but those also stick the landing, concluding with something that doesn't necessarily tie the desperate threads together, but at least leaves a huge impression. In contrast, here's how I remember the end of Norco, one of my favorite games of last year. IDK, something about cults, and I think there was a rocket ripped to the Juggalo detective.
Yeah, that basically sums up the end.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah. A lot of, ornate like but thematic Juggalo imagery. Yeah.
Yeah, I do like that Juggalo detective quite a bit. He's a good character.
Yeah.
Yeah, well said. Corey says, "Hey boys, I have to say I left your review of Norco feeling incredibly validated. I played Norco after seeing a bit of buzz and found it to be a lovely, funny romp with a head scratcher of an ending that ultimately revealed the sum of the game's parts were in fact less than each individual element touched upon. I was surprised by the effusive praise and many comparisons to Disco Elysium. It seems to me that since Disco Elysium's release, game reviewers have been tripping over themselves to declare an indie title the next Disco Elysium, when such comparisons diminish the monumental and singular accomplishments of that work, when what they really mean is a video game with above average writing and a leftist bent. Ultimately, the game, while being a worthwhile experience, ended up feeling like a Potemkin village of literary themes and societal critique. Just my thoughts. Thank you for the great work. P.S. There is a thread on the game's community page with over 300 comments asking the devs clarifying questions about the ending and various perceived plot holes, a reaction that was absent from critics' reviews and praise of the game. I suspect this was part of the impetus for the devs deciding that Norco is now part one of a trilogy."
If that is the case, that is the sweatiest thing.
I who knows, right? If that's really the case.
Yeah.
We don't know what motivated them.
Yeah.
As people. But if so, that is incredibly sweaty. We just don't know.
Yeah.
And it typically, like, I agree. I think that is probably why this took off. As you said, I don't actually care that much about plot holes.
Same.
Of a thing. I just didn't end up finding it very emotionally satisfying.
Yeah.
As a plot ending. Like it's not that it had holes. It wasn't like I was trying to square the equation. I just didn't have good feelings about it.
Yeah. It sold itself short, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Concluding here with something that's kind of positive. Randy says, "The experience of playing Norco was one of wading through a fevered anthology of character sketches and themelet morsels. It throws out so much that something is bound to hit you. It is in this fashion that Norco is the quintessential your mileage may vary experience. Where Dark Souls roots out your gameplay weakness in its broadness, so too does this Southern Gothic science fiction fairy tale find your thematic weaknesses and dredge them stubbornly from the mud. It turns out that home and loss, along with identity and robots, are two pre-bundled theme lunchboxes that still very much appeal to my palate. The two moments in that game that far and away had the most emotional impact were the description of the fourth flood and saying goodbye to Kay's childhood home at the game's fever dream end. This is why Million's role in the story worked for me. When Kay returns home, it is dead and empty, save for the flat affect android slouched casually in the bed of the family truck. Kay is, to some admitted degree of dissatisfaction, a hazy rest stop between a character and a player insert cipher. As a result of this, my first inclinations and impressions colored her actions with Million. One of Kay's earliest recollections upon interacting with Million was of her and Blake sitting on the floor poring over API documentation, trying to perform her routing procedure. Soon after was the recollection that Million spent much of her time in the stasis beneath the house, still yet a fugitive, which proactively explained to my homesick mind any odd alleged absences. Because that's what I, as Kay, wanted to believe about her strange, aloof big sister that escaped her life as a security drone. When I had Kay apologize to her for leaving, she meant it. When she asked if Millian took her leaving personally, she meant it and was invested in the android's response. Kay came home and Millian was all there was to welcome her back, a living ghost of a family life left behind. In the end, as the final specters of Kay's childhood home faded away, as the corpse of Millian tried to apologize and asked, "What am I then? Does it mean anything when I apologize?" It stung me. It stung when Kay, as I could not offer in response, "You are Millian. You are you. My mother took you in, and my brother and I unshackled you, and you became part of our family. Yes, it means absolutely everything."
Yeah, well said. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Randy. Appreciate you. Just in the way, you know, and this is the thesis of Randy's point, so I don't think Randy will have any feelings about this. I didn't get any of that from Millian. Mm-hmm. I wish I had that affection,
yeah,
you know, for Millian, but I just didn't pick up on it.
Yeah.
It didn't, you know, and it is not a fault to fill in bits of narrative with like your own heart. Mm-hmm. You know, like every work requires a degree of that. You know, yeah. And I can be guilty of being more guarded with that than is probably appropriate.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a little over robots, in a general sense, and just the murder bot that's been living at home that then just like my interactions with Millian just were not enough.
Yeah.
I was very suspicious of Millian and did not have any heart feelings for Millian. I kind of get it. You know, I can under the story that Randy told is interesting and good. And I can imagine a game that does that. It just doesn't feel like Norco to me.
Yeah,
I guess is a better way to put it.
Yeah, pretty much same. Specifically with Millian, it was too hilarious how sinister she was, you know, and just you've been missing. It felt like it was being played for comedy more so than her being played, you know, specifically as, you know, an older sister or like a, you know, any kind of authority figure, any kind of family member. It made the house feel more empty that she was the only thing left behind to me.
Yeah.
You know, you can call me a human supremacist for that. I know nobody's going to call me that.
Yeah, but I think not. I'm not willing to actually cancel you for not caring about robots. That's a bridge too far. And robots can be a metaphor for any number of real life minority, of which I actually do care about.
Yeah.
So it doesn't transfer. You know, not caring about the robot that is, I cannot stress this enough, is an assassin droid. in Norco that is programmed to kill you and tries to kill you. Mm-hmm. Me not caring about that does not map onto me not caring about any peoples that it could be a metaphor for.
Yeah.
Don't get it twisted.
Yes. Yeah. And but, just Millian represented a humanoid shaped hole that I thought could have been filled with a better thing in a game full of, you know, very insufficiently stuffed humanoid shaped holes.
Yeah. Yeah. The one thing that Randy points out in the response that I think was really strong, that I agree, is I really do like the description of the fourth flood.
Going through every room. Yeah, that was
a great sequence. Like there were really incredible sequences in Norco. Like I do get why individual moments might be moments that you know somebody loves. I couldn't bring myself to love it holistically.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
makes sense.
I'd love to live in a world where we're kind of over this robot thing, but I feel like it's just going to get worse before it gets better in terms of fiction.
Yeah. You know?
Like it's all going to be citizen sleepers from here on out. Like it's literally just going to be kind of robot feelings from here until I die. Yeah. And there's fiction.
And the way AI is going, everybody is taking all of this fiction about AIs and superimposing it and saying that is the actual problem with this stuff and not the, you know, the actual problem, which is, which is the labor catastrophe, labor apocalypse that could be waiting for us because of that.
Yeah. Almost certainly is waiting for us.
Yes.
Because of that. I have very little hope.
Yeah.
About that going well. But yeah, it's just looking forward to me spending, you know, however many years I have left, just playing game after game about robots with hurt feelings.
Yeah.
It's bleak.
We call sad robot games.
Yeah. Yeah. They're everywhere. Looking at the other responses you didn't pick, they're also critical.
Yeah.
You know, we did not cherry pick, haters on Norco.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thanks everybody again. We've already done the outro.
Yeah. So go and enjoy yourself. Have a good week. Yeah.
Go well. Be safe.